Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck. We are switching up the format a little bit on this weekend show and next weekend show for both hours. We're going to be focusing exclusively on markets and investing. In the first hour, I am focusing on a more broad look at the markets and money flows. Quite frankly, what sectors are outperforming and really what we should be focusing on. In the second hour, diving a bit more into the precious metals sector and dealing with some more of the exploration and junior companies. I want to hear all of your feedback, please. This kind of renewed focus of our show and our website. I know we still have a large following that likes to comment and talk about politics. That is why I'm still posting on our website a dedicated political posting every morning so that you all can share your opinions back and forth. But we are refocusing the show and the site more towards investing and markets. That is what supports this show. And quite frankly, that seems to be what a lot of you tune in to learn about. Some of the political back and forth does scare some new investors away from the show. I'm really just trying to reach out to as many investors, as many of you who are trying to learn about managing your money in the best way possible. So please, again, everybody, let me know what you think. I want to know how you all feel about this new direction that we are going in. That being said, let's start off this show. I am kicking off the show with Jesse Felder. He is the founder and editor of The Felder Report and one of my favorite guests to feature on the weekend show for broad market comments especially. And Jesse, let's start off with the US dollar. You recently posted an article to your subscribers that outlined that you're still watching the dollar closely. You made a comment at the very beginning of the year that 2020 will be the year to watch the greenback. You thought that there could be a decline in the dollar, which could possibly mark the end of the massive bull market in financial assets. Now, there are two different concepts here. Let's start off with the dollar, its continued volatility, and it's trading in this generally lower range. But you look at a much longer term 20-year chart, dollar is kind of in the middle of this very wide range that it's been in. What are the key factors that you are watching when it comes to the dollar?
So, I wrote at the very beginning of the year that it's 2020 will be the year to watch the dollar, and it's been an exciting year to watch it. We had the big spike in the dollar, you know, back in the spring as a part of the pandemic and a flight to quality or a flight, you know, the fear trade. People panicked into dollars. And then we've had the big dollar sell-off as a result of, you know, the Fed printing $3 trillion in a very short period of time. I've said, you know, it's important to watch the dollar because I do think the main narrative that's driving the bull market in both stocks and bonds is so long as the Fed is printing money, you know, interest rates can't go up, the bond market will be supported, and, you know, the stock market will also be supported as well through that money printing. So, but at some point, that money printing is going to create a bear market in the dollar. And then the Fed will be forced to choose in either supporting the financial markets or supporting the currency. They can't do both. So I do think that the decline in the dollar is probably a resumption of the bear market in the dollar that started a couple of years ago. But I think in the short run, people have gotten too bearish dollars. The positioning has just gotten way too crowded, too many dollar shorts and euro longs. And that probably needs to be unwound. And so, you know, I look at a variety of things in terms of fundamentals. You know, inflation is probably one of the important short-term drivers. You know, rising inflation is dollar bearish. Falling inflation is dollar bullish. We've seen a pickup in inflation as a result of the fiscal stimulus, but that was just kind of a short-term sugar rush. And the weak economy is probably very disinflationary, which is probably, since we're not going to, it looks like we're probably not going to get another fiscal package, I do think that's disinflationary and dollar bullish in the short run. And so, you know, that's just one factor. But I think it's really careful to pay attention to the dollar right now, because there's been a very close inverse correlation or negative correlation between the stock market and the dollar. So the dollar weakness since the spring has been almost perfectly correlated to stock market strength. And so a dollar rally would potentially mean a continuation of kind of this correction that we've seen in the stock market since, September.
Now, when talking about the dollar, we also have to look at other countries, especially Europe, because of how weighted that dollar index is towards the euro. And one thing that I just don't still quite understand is the dollar weakness in the face of this euro strength, because of the fact that, hey, Europe continues to shut down. We even heard from the Bank of England about increasing their bond buying program. I realize the Fed is still kind of sitting on the sidelines, waiting for even the ability to print more money from the U.S. government. But shouldn't this continued weakness in Europe and the continued push on the accelerator of easy money policies from European central banks, shouldn't that be driving the dollar higher?
Potentially in the short run. I think that the main driver of the dollar in terms of those policies is going to be the continued adoption of modern monetary theory here in the United States. When you have both parties, essentially there's a bipartisan consensus in Washington, now growing bipartisan consensus, that we don't need to worry about the growing debt because we can always print the money to pay back those obligations. Now, that's something that is much more difficult for European nations to do. With a European central bank, each country doesn't have its own central bank really any longer that's in charge of its currency. So they don't really have the ability, the direct ability like the United States to say, we are going to literally just print money to pay our obligations. And because we know we can do that, we can take on far more debt than we otherwise thought we were able to. So I do think that's probably dollar bearish over the long run. But like I said, in the short run here, this MMT has been essentially put on hold because we can't get it together to put together another fiscal package. So that inability to put together a fiscal package and the fact that the Fed has essentially not grown its balance sheet for months is short-term dollar bullish. I think that's why we've seen at least a halt in the dollar decline over the last couple of months, and possibly why we could see a dollar rally going forward over the short run is that MMT narrative has essentially been put on hold.
Okay. But again, it's just on hold. It's not going away anywhere. It will come back into the U.S. It's just the stall in the government is really handcuffing the Fed. Now, you mentioned the relationship between the dollar and the U.S. equity markets, that inverse correlation. What about the relationship between the dollar and some other so-called kind of currency assets like gold or even like Bitcoin? Both are doing well. Bitcoin is breaking out to a more extreme degree than gold, but gold is still up for the year substantially.
Yeah, and to me, one thing that has been worrisome to me about, I'm a long-term gold bull, and I've been talking with you about this for at least a couple of years now. Short term, I'm more concerned. Gold peaked around the same time, maybe about a month before the Nasdaq did. Gold peaked in late July, early August. The Nasdaq peaked in late August, early September. And they've had a very positive correlation. So it's the stock market has been negatively correlated to the dollar. And that goes along with this mindset of as long as the Fed is printing money and devaluing the currency, it should be good for assets like stocks and gold. And that's one of the things that's been worrisome to me is that if we do see a dollar rally, it's probably bearish not only for stocks, but gold and probably Bitcoin too. All of these things have been correlated to each other in essentially a risk on, risk off manner. You investors go risk on, it's good for NASDAQ, it's good for gold, it's good for Bitcoin. They go risk off and it's not, it's bad for these things. And so I do think the dollar rally, that I see is potentially, bearish in the short run for all of these things.
What's your time frame in terms of short run? Is that just to the end of the year? Is that through the Q1, Q2 of next year? What is that time frame?
Yeah, it's several months. It's probably through, you know, at least first quarter. I do think probably next year sometime we will get a fiscal, and it could be, you know, before the end of the year. It might not be till Biden's in office. But I did see something today. Trump doesn't want to, you know, have his name associated with another fiscal package before he leaves office, before Biden takes over. So we might not get a fiscal package. Eventually, we will get a fiscal package, and the Fed will be forced to monetize whatever fiscal package we see. So if that's $1 trillion, $2 trillion, you know, the Fed will be forced to expand its balance sheet by that amount. And that's probably very dollar bearish again. And so whenever that happens, that's probably when we see another decline in the dollar. So to me, you know, that probably doesn't happen until after Biden's inaugurated.
Now, you just brought up the Fed. Just a quick comment from you regarding the Fed this week. The statement was about as boring as it could be and pretty much a copy of the last Fed meeting. As we have outlined, the Fed really has their hands tied in terms of what they can do. But what do you think about the Fed's role in all this and the statement from this week?
You know, it was most interesting to me that the Fed continues to be the only, I guess, I don't want to say adult in the room because I don't really see them, you know, as serving that function. But right now, they are still calling attention to the weak economy. And it seems like with the stock market having soared since, you know, late March, nobody really sees that the economy is still very, very weak. If we look at, you know, jobless claims and economic activity and these types of things, we're still essentially right now as bad as we were at the worst part of the recession associated with the financial crisis. So things are really still very difficult for the economy, for the job market. We're still seeing whatever it is, 700,000, you know, unemployment claims every week. So, you know, that was something the Fed made a point to say, things are still really difficult. We're not out of the woods by any stretch. And with cases still soaring soaring to new highs, this is a difficult time we're in right now. And it seems like nobody else realizes this. And I really do think that's the most important takeaway from the Fed's meeting and statement this week.
All right, Jesse, let's get into another topic all related to the markets. And that deals with money flow. Something else you've been writing about, something you and I were talking about off mic before recording, deals with money flows first and foremost into volatility. The VIX has remained relatively high during all of this, shows that investors are still taking protection. Give us a little recap on what you've seen in terms of money flows and volatility.
Well, you know, it's, I think Christopher Cole put it best. He tweeted earlier today, and actually he has been for a few weeks now at least. I mean, he's been writing about this for years, that the stock market is really just a derivative now of the options market. It's the tail wagging the dog. And so what he means by that is simply, you know, something that we've talked about before, Corey, which is we've seen the volume in the options market just explode this year to something to bigger. It's been bigger than anything we have ever seen before in history. It's a clear speculative mania, as Stan Druckenmiller's put it. But there are consequences with that, where you have the options markets essentially moving the stock market. So we've talked about when we see massive call buying in individual stocks, right? The market makers end up being short calls. They have to go buy the underlying stock, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that pushes prices higher. We've seen kind of something similar with this, where we saw volatility was really, really high. There's a lot of uncertainty around the presidential election, and there still is to some degree. But the volatility indexes like the VIX were across many months were very, very high. And it was a very strangely skewed option, volatility picture heading into this election. And so what we saw heading into this was a lot of short selling, volatility heading into, you know, in the futures markets, which is, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy there. So you sell short volatility, and that forces market makers to be long volatility. What do they do to hedge their long volatility? They go buy S&P futures. That's part of it. The other side of it, we saw huge put buying in the VIX. And so when you see this put buying in the VIX, market makers end up being short VIX puts. So when the VIX starts going down, they have to start going and essentially shorting VIX even more than it already is to hedge their position. So this is very complicated kind of derivatives of derivatives of derivatives. But essentially, with the way people have been trading this and been positioned for this, it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy that we'd see a massive rally in the market this week. And it's really just structural. I don't think it, you know, people have been trying to interpret what people see in the markets and what it means for X, Y, and Z. It's really the same thing we've been seeing since late 2017, early 2018, which is these tails, you know, wagging the dog, whether it's short volatility or huge trades in the options markets that end up exacerbating moves in one direction or the other. I think those are the factors that are most important in the action we're seeing in the markets right now.
So then the strength in the markets, it's not what I've been saying in terms of money on the sidelines waiting for some clarity in the election. You think this is all structural. How much longer does this have to go on for?
Well, you know, when we've seen these kinds of unwinds, I mean, we saw it, I think I've been saying for quite some time now, we've seen it since the 2018 Volmageddon, which is we saw a lot of those short volatility trades just implode in February 2018 when the XIV blew up overnight. And so these trades lead to some short-term, dynamics in both directions. In the short run, they become a self-fulfilling prophecy and pushing markets higher, but then they eventually implode. And so I do think we could see the implosion of these trades, sometime over the next few weeks or months. It's really hard to say, but you watch things like Gamma and things. I think the Dark Index is another one. There's a website that tracks this stuff. Squeezemetrics.com is one that's very interesting to pay close attention to because it helps give you a visual representation of how dealers are positioned in the options markets. And so I think if we do see Gamma, getting up pretty high again, that's what we saw right at the high, just a few weeks ago, the early October high before stocks rolled over, we saw, Gamma levels getting very elevated. I think we'll probably see that again, and these trades will be unwound over a period of time again. And really, to me, this is just part of a very important topping process for the stock market that began really in June, July, and has been playing out since that time.
So, Jesse, what does this mean for the broad markets and the broad rotation theme that we were seeing into this election at the back end of this election or post-election, at least post-voting day? We saw more money flow into the NASDAQ. That so-called COVID trade was back on. How do you balance out where money is flowing when it comes to sectors or the balance between the lagging sectors and the outperforming sectors?
Well, one of the things that I've watched most closely for my entire career is insider activity. I'm talking about the top executives at public companies. And what we've seen over the last 6 months really is an unprecedented level of insider selling. We've seen selling, and it's really heavily concentrated in these tech names. Just this week, I think the last couple of days, Jeff Bezos sold another couple billion dollars worth of stock, but he's not alone. We've seen it in across the tech sector. And, at the same time, we talked about this last time I was on, massive insider buying in the energy sector. And since we last spoke, I've seen, some concentrated buying in the financial sector, namely in the banks. I'm talking about the mostly regional banks. The insider buying is you see more in small cap companies than you do in larger cap companies. And that's also probably another important theme is that I think probably over the next insiders, the smart money essentially betting on small cap over large cap and value over growth, old economy over new economy types of trades over the next 6 to 12 months. Typically there's a 12-month horizon on a lot of this insider activity. So I do think 12 months from now, we will see a lot of these financials and energy potentially dramatically outperform tech and small cap better than large cap.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Jesse, let's wrap it up there. Pleasure spending the first two segments of this show with you. It's always interesting to hear what nuances you are watching for in the markets and trying to make sense of what has been a crazy year and looks like will continue to be a volatile and crazy year through, the next 2 months and into next year. Jesse, thanks again for your time, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, Corey. Always good to talk with you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.